Check your grow room right from your phone with Kokonaut. Kokonaut can literally save your grow. Everybody needs one of these. KOKONAUT.com. Kokonaut allows you to check your temperature and humidity right from your smartphone. And most importantly, it can send you alerts if your room gets too hot or too cold. I can't tell you guys how many times I've seen people lose their grow because an AC blew out and their plants get fried, or they're losing all this growth because it gets too cold at night. Kokonaut can save you from that. You can observe multiple Kokonauts in the same app and even share that information with friends if you need them to keep an eye on your grow for you. It even gives you historical charts and data of your temperature and humidity so you can look back. It's less than half the price of the competitors, guys, and you can get another 10% off with promo code GROWCAST. Get a couple of them, one for your canopy, one for the root zone, ambient temperature, one for the garage or around the house. Get a couple of them, promo code GROWCAST for 10% off. KOKONAUT.com, promo code GROWCAST. Get to know your garden better with Kokonaut.
Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to GrowCast, the official cannabis podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. A very unique guest today. Thank you so much for reaching out, by the way. Someone who just reached out to me has got a lot of great information to share today. Owner of Plant Success, Jim Egan, is on the phone. How you doing, Jim?
Great. Yeah, nice to talk to you, Jordan.
Yeah, seriously, thanks for reaching out. I've seen your products a couple different places. I've seen your, the Killer Whale product you have with the big killer whale cone, the Orca.
Indeed.
Yeah, that one I've seen around, man. People seem to like that one and post pics of it. But yeah, Plant Success, the whole line is an organic line. It's very biodiverse, scientifically formulated. But you tell me, Jim, could you give my audience a brief background of your career and your credentials and Plant Success?
Yeah, absolutely. One slight correction.
I'm sorry.
I'm not the owner.
Oh, I thought you were a co-owner.
Well, it's a family business. So,
right. Okay.
Technically. But yeah, so, you know, it is a family business. We started in the 90s. My family, my uncle, kind of was working for Forest Service and was at the cutting edge of sort of mycorrhizal inoculation. And we decided to make commercial blends called Plant Success originally. And the cannabis community got a hold of it. And, you know, as it pertains to your podcast, that's really High Times started running articles. All the forums started blowing up with just how beneficial this stuff is to plant growth and specifically mm-hmm. the cannabis plant. So, you know, we've been working in both traditional lawn and garden markets as well as cannabis, but just horticulture as a whole. And yeah, we've been doing it since the 90s. We've seen the use of mycorrhizal fungi really take off. And we're really happy about that because it's provides so many benefits for plant growth and horticulture and fertilizer reduction and water usage reduction, mm-hmm. you know, pollution reduction in a sense, which we'll explain kind of how all these work and why. But that's a brief introduction of how it got started. And me personally, you know, I remember grinding mushrooms up when I was a little kid to start these blends, you know, finding them in the forest and then bringing them back. And that's really where it started for me. I eventually, you know, went off to school, majored in environmental science. I had a farm at one point. I've been involved in native plant restoration, permaculture, sustainability in general, all the while educating myself, working with the family, and learning about, you know, best application practices and just really watched this whole mycorrhizal thing happen over the last...
Best application practices? Is that a sly way to say you were growing? Are you much of a grower yourself, or are you just more interested in the fungus?
Well, I grow a little bit. And I've grown on the farm, was a vegetable farm. And then, yeah, I've grown for personal use and I do some consultation, but that's not my main focus. I travel so much for work that, you know, it's kind of tough to maintain a garden at this point. But
yeah, I know what you mean, man.
Yeah.
Well, that's great stuff, though. I'm a big fan of the good mycorrhizal products. You know, talk to me about mycorrhizal fungi in an organic system versus your regular old synthetic system, someone who's running some salt nutrients, it's still even super beneficial for the salt setup, right? As far as nutrient uptake and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's really kind of like a balance for the plant. So it provides more resilience. It's like a human being, right? So if you went through and you killed off all the biology inside of us, we wouldn't last longer than a week or two. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of other functions. People mainly focus on phosphorus uptake, which is one of the big reasons that plants partner with the fungi. But there's a whole list of other reasons that even some we don't even know about yet.
Right.
But there's a whole range of functions that the mycorrhizal fungi and bacteria, for that matter, perform in the root zone, which when it's absent, you know, basically you have this giant chasm that can get filled by other things. It's a niche in sort of this, the ecology of a plant that will be filled by something. So, it really provides a balance so that if something gets in there, you know, I have to be careful, you know, because we're not registered as a pesticide. So I make no claims about our products in that realm, legally. So, you know, you can Google these species and look up what they actually do for the plant. But a big part of it is, once again, I have to be careful with the words, but the strength of the plant, the vigor of the plant, you know, just like the human being.
It makes it less of an optimal target for everything. Is that what you're kind of getting at when it comes to resisting pests, resisting disease, resisting mildews and things like that? A general vigor definitely helps in that regard.
Yeah, you can fill in the words there, but I think I've kind of gotten the point across of there's just a strength there that the plant is able to better produce the compounds. You know, if anything gets locked up in the root zone, that the root's function isn't to actually unlock phosphorus and nitrogen and micronutrients from the soil. Granted, in, you know, grows, a lot of those they're pretty available if you're a perfect grower and nothing goes wrong and all that sort of thing.
Right.
But the second something gets out of balance, and in soil, it's a no brainer. But the point of the bacteria and the mycorrhizae is they're able to release these exudates, these different enzymes, their own tissue. They make micronutrients and phosphorus and nitrogen bioavailable. Mm-hmm. So they provide more resilience for the plant. So if you have them in there, if you get, you know, if the temperature's not optimal, if the pH gets thrown off a little bit, these organisms bring that back into balance. So it's kind of like a ballast for a ship. It enhances the stress tolerance of the plant.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't even think about that when it comes to things like transplant shock or things like that. But I did know that it works both ways when it comes to uptake, like you were saying. Is it true that it helps nutrient uptake, but it can also limit uptake to prevent toxicity?
It can, yeah. So they use these mycorrhizal inoculums, and when, you know, you kind of posed that question earlier, and in heavily polluted soils, and it actually helps plants grow and restore the soil back to a condition that's conducive for, you know, other plants and for restoration.
Mm-hmm. So, maybe that's what I was getting at. Okay.
Yeah, it has an ability to, yeah, limit, you know, uptake of certain things that would be toxic to the plant, right? So if the plant dies, the host of the mycorrhizae dies as well. So it does have some ability to, yeah, limit toxic things that would be toxic to the plant. But yeah, it and generally, like I said, it's involved in this dance with the bacteria and releasing you know, enzymes, and it actually can, the pH in your soil actually is different in different sections depending on what bacteria are there, if it's closer to the fungi or if you're closer to the root itself. But they use all these tools, right, to unlock soil nutrients and to keep that system flowing. So they're able to get micronutrients and harvest phosphorus and actually fix nitrogen. So a lot of people don't know that mycorrhizal fungi as well as bacteria outside of the rhizobia bacteria, which most people are familiar with, it partners with legumes and stuff, but the mycorrhizae and the bacteria can actually fix atmospheric nitrogen and then eventually make that plant available.
Wow. Yeah, you know, and I'll tell you, that is the number one thing that I see in consultations, especially with new growers all over the place. You see lockout, you see overwatering, you see overfeeding, like too much nutrient use, and lockout. And flushing is always my answer, but this mycorrhiza seems to be a great barrier to those common, like, newbie grower mistakes, if you will. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, it's not a silver bullet. I don't mean to imply that, but the enhanced stress tolerance. Yeah, through all the mechanisms I'm saying, it certainly is a must for new growers.
Mm-hmm. Well, is the relationship between cannabis and mycorrhiza, you said it was symbiotic in the sense that if the host dies, then the fungi dies as well. But is it a real give and take relationship like it is with trees and things like that? Or is cannabis more the main beneficiary? I guess what I'm saying is mycorrhiza particularly effective on cannabis? Because it seems to be.
Yeah, absolutely it is. So it can't produce its own food. And that food is sugar, is carbohydrates. So that's mainly what photosynthesis is involved in producing. So the fungi is literally getting fed and surviving through this exchange of the sugars from the plant. So yeah, it's definitely mutually beneficial. And in return, it provides, you know, one way to think about it is that when plants first came out of the oceans and started colonizing terrestrial environments, their root systems were very primitive. They were like holdfasts of seaweed, if you think of that. And so they had a hard time surviving. And really what the mycorrhizal fungi, if you think about it, they're much finer. If you look, like you kick over a log in a forest, you see all that mycelium, that white stuff. Those threads are super, super fine. So that surface area is able to perform those functions of releasing exudates and releasing enzymes and unlocking nutrients and minerals in a much wider space than these big old chunky roots. So the plants, scientists actually think that root systems really evolved simply as attachment sites to this fungal mass.
Wow.
If you look at a healthy forest, roughly 80% of that is actually fungi and only 20% is actual like plant roots. So the thought is that plant roots are really just attaching into this sort of mycorrhizal network. And when we grow plants absent of that, we're expecting these roots to perform a function that they really aren't specialized to do. And what results is you have to fire, like, you know, you get about 70 in traditional agriculture, they get about 70% loss of phosphorus, you know, so they're applying all of that phosphorus, only expecting about 10 to 20% to actually get into the roots.
Wow.
Because the roots are underdeveloped. Not only that, you then have to start hitting it with all these pesticides and fungicides because the plant's immune system is compromised. So, you know, agriculture minus the biology, not just the mycorrhizal fungi, but that's a big one, minus this biological aspect, you have to perform all the functions that the biology did.
Yeah, it seems so, like some really backwards logic. Is it applicable on a large scale? Is this something that we're just too stupid to fix? You know what I mean?
Is it?
When it comes to big ag, when it comes to big ag and their practices, like you said, you know, the death by numbers, right? Just unload the whole clip and hope that 10% makes it through. Is this something that we could improve on a nationwide scale as far as big ag goes, or is it not feasible? You know what I mean?
100%. No, it's totally feasible.
Wow. So it's just us being stupid. There's no good reason that we go about it the way we do.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's super easy. You inject the stuff into the fertigation system. You know, you can broadcast it. You can make seed coats with it. And then your fertilizer use goes down by 20. It depends on the crop. It depends on the soil. But generally, you can get like 15, 30% reduction in fertilizer use, which results in less runoff into local waterways. So you're actually reducing the leaching from the fields because there's less fertilizer there. But also, I mean, there are some soil researchers that argue, you know, that the fields that they've studied, when they bring biology back, there are so much nutrients tied up in those fields that oftentimes they don't even need to use fertilizer for the first couple of years.
Wow.
You know, and so, yeah, when you think about that and you understand that the role of the bacteria and the fungi are to capture, to release the minerals to the plant, you know, you then understand why our system has been so ineffective when we sterilize our soils, right? So leaving a field fallow, you know, you're basically killing all the biology. Sunlight kills the biology. You know, these herbicides kill the biology. Tilling kills the biology. You know, it's like everything we do in ag is like a war against the biology. So when you start actually understanding it and nurturing it, it changes the whole equation.
Wow. That's really interesting stuff, man. Let's talk about plant success as opposed to other brands, other biodiversities that people can find out there. Why is plant success, in your opinion, superior to its competitors?
Yeah, well, what I tell anyone is like this stuff is microscopic. So you're basically going on the reputation of the company.
Yeah, that's a good point. You can't be like, well, let me feel it. Let me rub it between my fingers. You know, like
exactly.
Kind of toss the fungus sack up in the air. Give it a little like aromatic whiff.
Right. Yeah, you can't smell it. Yeah. You know, it's like buying a car. It's like locked in the garage and you can't go in the garage, you know, it's like,
no, it's a good point.
So what I tell people is, you know, there are reputable companies out there, besides us, but you know, we've been doing it for a really long time. And you know, and then you kind of get into the ingredients. The first thing I say with people is to flip the label over. You know, check out what you're looking at, endo versus ecto.
Talk about that for a moment, please. Just for the lay people like myself. I know that there's two different types and a lot of brands only use one or the other. Can you just dive into that a little bit briefly? Sorry to interrupt.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's part of the understanding that. So endo versus ecto, you have endomycorrhizae, which forms with roughly about 80% of plants. And that's the type that cannabis farmers are interested in because it forms with cannabis. It also forms with most of your major fruits and vegetables. And the other major type, and there's others besides this, but the other major type forms with roughly 10 to 15% of plants. And that's the ecto variety, which is your tree forming variety.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so when you flip it over, there's no purely ecto blends really that are on the retail market. But you know, you flip it over, you're going to see endo and ecto. Cannabis farmers want the endo, and we include ecto in some of our retail blends just because it makes it a blend that anyone can use, any landscaper can use, any homeowner can use.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, for us, it's so cheap to include it. So if you look for a gram of material, you've got probably about 2 million spores of the ecto, which is astronomical. So the wow. tree-forming variety, yeah. I was on a phone call yesterday, and I literally, one of the species that we include was popping up in my yard. And I find this stuff everywhere. I was on a walk in San Diego last weekend, and I kept seeing him in the park. And my friend was like, oh, we thought that was dog poop. I was like, no, that's actually dead man's foot. It's Pisolithus tinctorius. So this stuff is ubiquitous in the environment. So it's really, really cheap for us to include in our blends. So that's why historically we've included in some. Half of our products are straight endo. And then I'd say, yeah, about half of our products have endo and ecto.
So there's diversity within those two groups too, right?
Yeah, that's the next part. So within those two groupings, we generally recommend going with a diverse blend, and I'll tell you why in a sec. But we also have a single species, which is called our Great White Granular One. It's the most studied species. And it's Glomus inuratices, now Rhizophagus irregularis or Rhizophagus inuratices, depending on who you talk to. But so that species, where it was isolated from, the conditions it evolved in, it has certain abilities, right? So it's a broad former. It can really extract phosphorus out of soils. And those are kind of the two big benefits of it. However, if you have a plant that's not the problem that it's facing, it's not going to derive much benefit from that species. Mm-hmm. So blanketing your entire grow and your entire field with one species, you're somewhat limited in the benefits that you're providing. And what we've seen in mycorrhizal use and inoculation is that the real benefit is that it brings up your lowest performing plants, thus over increasing your overall yield. So in a field, you're going to have, you know, each plant is going to have a little bit different problem that it's facing. And obviously between fields, between grows, different environments. So some plants are good at limiting arsenic uptake. Some plants or some species like Glomus mossae are good at reducing transplant shock. Mm-hmm. So what we've seen is by including a diversity of species is that the plant actually can decide which mycorrhizal fungi to form with. And even within a season, it can turn off a species and turn on another species.
So it taps into what it needs when it needs it.
Exactly.
That's pretty incredible.
What we've seen is, the plant is in control.
Wow. So please go on. That's really fascinating stuff. I guess I'm just taking it in for a second.
Yeah. No, it's such an evolving science. And, you know, the thing, our research team is still working on different species and testing because there's estimated to be about over 300 endo species, the one that forms with cannabis, in the wild. And right now we have one species that's really well studied, and then one species that's barely studied, and then a couple other species that, you know, are even less studied. So
this is a very unknown field. The future possibilities is limitless. I briefly saw a part of that TED Talks. What was it? 7 Ways Mushrooms Can Save the World. Are you familiar with that one?
If it's Paul Stamets, I'm very familiar with his research, but I'm not sure. Is that who gave the talk?
I can't recall right now. I watch a lot of different presentations.
Mushroom hat.
I don't know if it was a mushroom hat, but yeah, that could have been him. He was talking about the refining properties of oyster mushrooms and how if you were to grow oyster mushrooms on oil slicks from oil spills, they start to blow up and grow huge and consume the oil, and they turn black from the oil until all the oil is gone, and then slowly the blackness resides and they process through the blackness, and now that's gone, and they're back to a regular oyster mushroom, and they're even edible if you give them enough time. And he's talking about how we could use this to clean up the oil spills and clean up our shores, and it was just mind-blowing.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah, that's the job. So that's actually a good point, and that's a different type of mushroom. It's a different grouping of mushroom, which would be a saprophytic mushroom. So that's acquiring its food and its nutrition through the oil, through breaking down wood and other materials, and they don't have an association with the plant, with the mycorrhizal fungi, so they can actually produce their own food. And he's discovered that there's a huge use, and I totally support that, of specifically oyster mushroom, but I'm sure there's others that can break down hydrocarbons and petroleum, which I would have much rather seen that used in the Gulf than the dispersants that they use and these heavy chemicals that one has any idea their effect in the environment.
Yikes.
But and then like I said, you know, they were using, Indian researchers using mycorrhizae to kind of restore I think it was around power plants or just really toxic soil. They were getting mycorrhizae. When no other plants could grow, they would take some of that soil, and in the lab, they would actually use this mycorrhizae and kind of watch the mycorrhizae adapt to the soil slowly. And then they'd put them back out in the field. And those were the pioneer plants that would, like a weed, were kind of restoring the soil by themselves. So they will take over, you know, they will produce by themselves. So season after season, they actually grow into the plant roots themselves. So they'll colonize, especially with perennial plants, they will totally colonize a root system and eventually spread to the other plants. It's kind of a slow process, but it will, once you introduce it, it's alive. Oh, wow. So it's constantly growing with the plant, which is why we say use it early on. So use it on your cuttings, use it on your transplants. As soon as you get a hold of your plants, you can even sprinkle it on seeds. It will grow with the life of the plant. So the sooner you have it on the root system, the sooner you're going to get those benefits.
That's fantastic. Well, let's talk about that really quick. The different methods, the different delivery systems. What's the difference between soluble mycorrhiza? You know, you got the granular, you got the liquid. Talk to me about the different mediums.
Yeah, essentially what you're dealing with are spores. So if you think of an apple tree, right, that's the body of the fungus. And then the apple hanging off the limb is the spore, right? Well, the seeds are like the spores. So we produce spores and there's multiple delivery methods. So essentially the different blends are just different ways to tie it into whatever agricultural enterprise is happening. So whether it's you do a fertigation system or you sprinkle it in when you're transplanting, they just make these different forms make it easier to apply in different circumstances. The best way that we've seen, or I guess I would say the best results, you know, because you got to balance labor versus cost versus all the things you're dealing with on a farm. But what we've seen is sprinkling the powder right on the root. So physical contact is the most important thing. You don't really want to just lay it on top of the soil. You don't want to spread it through your entire soil medium. You want it to make direct contact with the root system.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people will take our great white, and it's supposed to be dissolved in water, which is a great way to use it. You can use it in your reservoir. You can water it in. But some people actually just sprinkle that right on the root system, and that will, we've just seen tremendous root growth. Now, you know, like I said, you have to balance that with the cost of it. So we also have a granular material you can sprinkle in the hole at the time of transplant, which is a great way to do it. There's a whole host of ways to do it.
So the most effective is direct contact with the roots, but it's better than just getting it in there is better than nothing. Obviously, is there anyone who can't benefit from this? Should everyone who's listening to this podcast go throw it in their soil, go get some plant success?
If they're growing cannabis, I absolutely would use it. There are plants that, you know, like I said, don't form, but I don't, you know, if listening to this podcast, they're probably interested in
exactly
the cannabis plant. So it would be my recommendation to do it. And even just using the minimum amount, you'd see a benefit. Some people will use it every watering. Some people will use it, you know, every 2 weeks, 3 weeks. You can cut off like 2 to 3 weeks before harvest, maybe 2 weeks. You want to get it established early, and reapplication just helps. Like we haven't really talked about, we also have about 16 species of bacteria in most of our blends that contain both mycorrhizae and bacteria, because you can buy just the mycorrhizae. You can buy mycorrhizae and bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think of the products that are a combination of bacteria and mycorrhizae as they're basically instant compost teas.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah, they've got all the bacillus in there, which are super popular. Bacillus thuringiensis is used as a foliar spray in organic agriculture. Bacillus subtilis.
So you're getting the biodiversity injection, and you're making that plant super happy without having to deal with the 48 hours of bubbling or whatever it is.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm an advocate of all of the above, you know, like doing a actively aerated compost tea, with some worm castings or compost. I try and mix it up, but I love the ease of just mixing a little bit of like our great white or our plant success organic soluble in water. And then,
Yes. You
know, it's ready to use.
Yeah, exactly. The ease is huge. And it's all about delivery methods, right? Whether it's you're growing synthetic and you have different bloom enhancers that you're switching off of, or you're growing organic and you have all these different inputs of you know, nitrogen, but from all these different sources, all these different bioavailabilities, or an MMA fighter who's eaten multiple types of proteins because he needs to get it from multiple sources. It's all about the multiple delivery methods, right?
Yeah, it's like, you know, I think of in permaculture, there's stacking functions kind of thing, or basically building in resilience into the system. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if the element or the function that's needed is phosphorus, it's like, okay, well, let's use the roots. You know, they can take phosphorus in. Let's have some bacteria that are solubilizing phosphorus, making it available. Let's have the mycorrhizae that increase the surface area of the roots, taking up that phosphorus. Also, it's soluble, you know, so it's like,
sure.
Maybe a light foliar.
Are you just trying to get it in there?
Yeah, exactly. Put some on the leaves, but you know, it's about, if one system fails, having those other elements there to support that is really how the natural systems work. And, you know, cannabis plant comes from the environment. So having built-in resilience is really a benefit for growers.
Mm-hmm. To an already resilient plant. You know what I mean? People don't realize
how
tough this plant is. When you're trying to grow big, huge, delicate buds, it gets more complicated, but just as a plant, as a life form, it's a tough one. So with the fungus combined, it's just a really fun plant to grow.
So beautiful.
Yeah. And that's what I like about you, Jim, is I can tell your passion. Like, you're genuinely, a lot of the people I speak with are entrepreneurs. A lot of the people I speak with are businessmen, and more power to them, you know, because they're amazing in their own ways, but you seem to really love fungus. And that's what we love about you at GrowCast, man. Is there anything I'm missing? Anything you'd like to share about your product before we tell my listeners what we can expect and where they can go?
Let me think. How to use it, you know, diversity, I think we pretty much covered everything.
You did a good job selling it, man. I think anyone who's out there that's not using it is certainly considering it. It's an easy, cheap additive that seems to have a lot of a very wide array of benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. And even that term selling it, you know, it's like we're in the business of educating. We are based on, like I said, and the combination of that with natural systems. So we just try and educate. You know, I've been fortunate enough to be doing this since I was a kid and have a family that was involved in this and my own interest. I mean, who doesn't love growing plants? It's like, it's meditation. it's stress relief.
It's true.
You know, that's why I got into farming. I'm passionate about soil minerals and that's one thing I didn't mention. Rock dust and minerals and seaweeds and stuff. The mycorrhizal fungi just eat that stuff up, which is going to, you know, really mineralize your plants and give them the ability to produce the chemicals that they need to produce.
Mm-hmm. It's making bioavailable, minerals from the rocks in the soil. It's something that everyone seems to benefit from. And like you said, I'm glad you're focused on the mycorrhiza. Obviously it's a benefit if they buy, your family's product, but, you're about education. And for those who are interested, what's coming around the corner with Plant Success, and where can we send them as far as a website or where they can find you?
Great. Yeah. So plant-success.com. Just Google it. You'll see it come up there. We've got all of our whole lineup of products. Real quick, Great White's our most popular, and it's the one that I use. I love it. It's super concentrate, so there's a lot of spores in there. We've got, there's 16 species of bacteria as well. There's a diversity of the endomycorrhizae. So it's got a little bit of glycine, a simple sugar to feed everything to get it started. It's got a little bit of B1, helps with transplant shock, a little bit of vitamin C, ascorbic acid. That's a great product. Liquid version of that is called Orca. That's an awesome product, super easy to use.
Yeah, I see a lot of people using it. I love the branding on the Orca. He looks like a badass, like, he's a killer.
Yeah, no, that was my brother Tim. He's the genius behind all of the sort of different animals and characters. But yeah, he was insistent that it looked angry.
Yeah, I'm a fan.
Yeah, so then that's the liquid, single species Great White granular one, and then we have a certified organic line, Plant Success Organics. And then our newest product that's coming out is called Myco Chum. So there's a big tuna on it, right? So you got the Great White, and then you've got the chumming for the Great White. But it's food for the mycorrhizae and the bacteria. This product has no biology in it. Not all it is, but it's full of fish hydrolysate, really biologically
yummy.
Available fish. Yeah, right. It actually doesn't smell that bad.
Really?
Molasses.
Okay.
Liquid seaweed. And then humic acids, all in one product. It's super cost effective. So it's not very expensive when you compare it to all these other fish products. It works so awesome. Brewing teas with it. Sometimes I'll just add it to the microbes, do a foliar with it, you know, do a straight root drench with it. It feeds all the biology, which keeps that balance. It keeps a happy soil family. You know, it doesn't feed the plant directly, but eventually all that biology becomes food for the plant. So this is an addition to any nutrients you're already running. It's just a little bit of food to ensure that your biology stays alive.
So just a little treat.
Exactly. And that one's called MycoChump.
Awesome. Hey, man, thanks so much, Jim. Really appreciate you doing this interview, reaching out. This was some great stuff.
Absolutely, Jordan. What a great opportunity.
Everybody out there, you know what to do. GrowCastPodcast.com, at GrowCast on Instagram. Find us there. Plant success. Loving what you guys are doing. Feel free to come back anytime, Jim. We'd love to have you.
Awesome. Awesome.
All right, everybody out there. Jordan River and Jim Egan signing off, saying be safe and grow smarter.